Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome back to the Believe in Vanderbilt Football Podcast on the Believe Podcast Network, presented by betonline.ag. In the Music City, I'm Matt Perkins, and joining me, as always, Commodore and NFL veteran Ryan Seymour. Ryan, how you feeling today?
I'm good, Matt. I'm trying to take the attitude of, you know, controlling what I can control and looking into next week and trying to take the loss against ETSU and put it behind me. But obviously, we're going to relive some of that today and kind of cover what we saw. But, you know, I'm still optimistic. It's only we're going into week two. So we got a lot of football left.
Yeah, there's a lot of football left. And, you know, despite what we're about to talk about, I think that there were a couple of reasons for optimism, but we'll get into that in a little bit. Before we do, want to remind you guys that we are, in fact, presented to you by betonline.ag. The football season is in full swing, and as always, BetOnline is your number one spot for pro and college football action this season. Make sure to get updated odds, props, and contests over at betonline.ag. There's a $500,000 NFL Mega Contest, a $200,000 NFL Survivor Contest, both of which are open now over at BetOnline. So head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 100% welcome bonus. Take advantage of their opening day super promo. Make a bet on Thursday, September 9th, between the opener between the Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys. And if you lose, your wager will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up using the promo code NFL100. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet your favorite sports. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Also want to mention that we have another new sponsor here on the podcast, Balance 7. Balance 7 is a liquid dietary supplement with the powerful ability to raise pH levels in the body. It's a proprietary mixture of safe, all-natural minerals that trigger the body's own ability to maintain a healthy immune system. You can see how Balance 7 has helped many people from around the world. And right now, if you go to balance7.com and use the promo code BELIEVE, you'll get $10 off their 32-ounce bottle. The bottle lasts for 11 days, which is the perfect amount of time to get the pH balance drink to go to work. Again, that's balance7.com and use the code BELIEVE at checkout. BLEAV, Balance 7. Ryan. If you were a gambling man over at Bet Online, you probably did not do super well if you're gambling on the Doors. I was there in person. You were watching on TV. That was one of the uglier games I've seen. I'm not gonna lie. There's not a whole lot of way to sugarcoat it, man. When you lose by 20 points to a mid-tier FCS team at home, I mean, it was not good. I want to start up front, though, with the offensive line, because to me, obviously, we are an O-line centric podcast, and on top of that, I felt like there were some real issues there on the offensive line. What did you see out of this group?
Well, to piggyback off your initial statement, we just couldn't get anything. We could not get in a rhythm, and that meant the entire team. Defensively, offense, we just couldn't put any plays together. You know, early on in the game, we couldn't convert on third down. As far as offensive line, this offensive line is still learning how to run the zone offense. Obviously, we saw that this is kind of new this year, new for Vandy. The interior three I think is clearly our weakest link at this point. I think Tyler Steen had a really, really good game. I watched him pancake several guys. I think he understands this zone offense a little bit. I noticed, like, again, I kind of watch like individual guys. I'll pick a spot and then I'll just kind of watch a guy and see, you know, if he does good or does bad. And I saw a lot of mental errors from a lot of the guys, at least in the interior three. And what that means is, like, when you're running zone offense, it's supposed to be a very fast paced scheme. And which means you're not supposed to kind of stop running your feet. A lot of times you basically are working a lot of combination blocks. Let's just say you're running zone left. The left guard and the left tackle are going to be working. Usually the left tackle is going to block the DN and the left guard is going to work up to the play side linebacker. The center is going to reach the shade or maybe work up to a linebacker and the backside guard is going to take over the shade or vice versa. The center is going to reach the shade and the backside guard is going to work up to the backside backer and the backside tackle is going to cut off the three. Well, a lot of times defensive linemen aren't just going to stay in one spot. And what I mean, and what I saw is when the D line shifted or moved or shot into a gap or stunted, the guys felt confused. They felt like they were stuck on a man when that's not how you run zone offense. You're basically blocking a zone almost. Like, you don't want to stop because the guy picks off backside. If I'm on the backside guard and tackle, and if the shade crosses my face, well, the tackle is now going to pick up that shade who just crossed the guard's face, and the guard needs to keep going. You're basically just trading responsibilities. And what I saw a lot of is that the guys were not, I guess you could say, aware of the secondary level. You and I were kind of texting back and forth. I saw a lot of the linebackers fitting these big holes because we did not see the O-line working up to the second level correctly or the way they should. And the reason why I noticed that is because I felt like a lot of the guys were playing man and getting stuck on a man, and that's not how you run a zone offense. And so these linebackers were flying downhill in these big gaps, which, you know, to the untrained eye, it looked like, oh, there's a huge hole, but you're not accounting for all the men in the box. And therefore these guys are just freaking having a field day on our running backs. And so from someone who's run his own offense, when I was in Seattle, I just noticed the guys aren't really familiar with yet on how to run that type of offense. And I think as we go into the running backs as well, I don't think they are necessarily helping the O-line. And how a running back helps the O-line, especially in his own offense, is pressing the hole, and that's taking it play side. And if it's there, taking the gap, and if not, cutting it backside. I saw a lot of, oh, I'm just going to cut it immediately back, not pressing the hole, not getting the linebackers to suck in play side and then having an opportunity to cut back. So sucking those linebackers over gives a chance for the backside tackle to maybe pin some of these guys and then the running back cut it back. So I saw a lot of mental errors on the O-line, and that is playing man and not running necessarily a zone scheme offense. And then I also saw at the running back position them not really giving the O-line a good chance to kind of let these plays unfold. And that's what sometimes these zone schemes take. You got to be patient at running back, but you got to be really quick on the O-line, because you got to be able to, like, press the hole and go if it opens up, because it's going to take a second. You're looking at the running back is reading usually the play side tackle's butt. And basically he's waiting for that hole to kind of develop. And that is that tackle stretching out that D line, that end, stretching him out, and then pinning him or bench pressing him out. And then there creates the hole, but that takes time to develop. So a running back's got to be patient in the sense that he's got to either take it play side or he's got to at least press it play side so that the linebackers suck over and then he can cut it back. And sorry to get really technical, but getting technical in today, but as we have something to kind of look at and talk about, like someone who's run the zone offense before, the guys just don't, in my opinion, they haven't quite figured out that concept yet.
Yeah, and I think that with this adjustment to zone, I guess my question for you then Is that simply a matter of reps and practice, like that they haven't had yet that they need to get going, or is it an indictment of coaching, of talent level?
My initial statement was the guys on defense aren't going to sit there. They're going to stunt. They're going to make moves. They're going to make twists. You know, in practice, a lot of times you're running against a scout team guy who's just told, hey, I got this gap. You know, and they're just giving a look for the O-line. And a lot of times you're just not getting a real sense of how the defense is going to react against this style of offense. So I think, you know, definitely reps. And this is a great game. Hopefully they're going to go in there. They went in there yesterday or today and are watching this tape to kind of go through some of these concerns. And that is you don't have a man in zone scheme, right? Because you just have to trade that off. So to your point, I think a lot of it is just not enough reps and maybe some coaching. I don't know. I did have a chance to talk with Coach Blazek, and I really like his – he seems to have a good concept of the zone scheme. I just think the interior three again, we got two guys who had zero playing time going into Saturday, the starting center and the left guard. And I think that's where – we were hurting the most, and it wasn't just, sorry to keep rambling, but it wasn't just them playing man. It also, unfortunately, was a lot of just not, I don't want to say being manhandled, but like, for instance, I was watching our center who couldn't be more than 6'2", trying to reach the shade. And I don't want to say he doesn't have a God gifting ability to reach a shade, but I'm telling you right now, come our SEC schedule, if you're a center and you can't reach a play side shade, you're going to be in a world of hurt. Then you're going to have to start slowing your guard down and chipping the shade and doing all that kind of junk. And that's not zone offense. So, you got to have a center that can reach a play side shade, because if he can't do that, they're going to be in a world of hurt. And I did see, unfortunately, that wasn't the case. I didn't think that he did a really good job of just getting his hat across and not losing ground, which is what you can't do. Yeah. You know,
I felt like he was just getting pushed back in the pocket constantly too during pass pro. And yeah, you know, I mean, we've been talking about sort of the running attack here, but the pass blocking wasn't a whole lot better. And you know, Ken Seals did not have, or Mike Wright, when he was behind center, did not have a super clean pocket to throw from a whole lot. And I think that is one of the reasons that we saw a lot of the overthrows, that because he was trying to compensate for having guys in his face. And you talk about the center, Warden, and it was tough, man. He had a baptism by fire, and it's not even like a real one, because it's not like we're going up against Alabama or anything like that. And
yeah, I mean, can
so
you imagine?
I'm worried that when they have to play Georgia, I don't know if you saw that Georgia Clemson game. Did you see Georgia's defensive line? Because those boys are a whole lot bigger, a whole lot faster, and a whole lot stronger than the guys from ETSU.
Yeah, it just, because when you can't, like, for instance, let's just say for people who don't understand, like, maybe offensive line. Like, if I have a play side shade, I'm the center, and that basically means the guy's lined up just to my, let's just say we're the strong side to the left. That means I got a guy who's just lined up to my left if I'm at center. My job as a center is to basically get my hat in front of his hat and not lose any ground. When you automatically, your hat is behind his because you can't get your hat across, whether that's you don't have fast enough feet or you're just getting pushed back, that automatically forces the running back to take it backside. There is no play side gap for him to fill because the freaking shade is standing in the B gap. Obviously, you know, there's going to be some displacement as the ball snaps. There's nowhere for him to go except for take it backside. And so when you cannot reach a shade at center, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, especially if you're trying to run sort of, especially like that zone stretch play, right, which is so common in the zone offense, where you're really trying to run it like that way. Like, he's just going to blow it up.
You got to have a good center. If you can have a center that covers up a shade in the zone offense and basically at least gets it where your head, where your helmet to helmet, it gives a running back a chance when you cover the guy up to at least take it play side or cut it back. But when you're automatically had his backside against the shade at center, when your job is to try to cross his face, oh my God, it's a really, really tough situation for the running back. And to go back to the, to kind of go back to the pass game, I think our tackles will look okay. I thought Steen looks really, really good.
I thought Ashmore, I actually thought Ashmore was the best offensive lineman on the night. I thought that he was actually the most consistent, at least over there.
Yeah, I should have kind of paid attention to more to him. And I think the reason why I didn't notice him more often was because he just was doing his job the whole time. You know, a lot of times you take your attention to something when there's something wrong. You know, I used to always like get frustrated in meetings when I did things right and the coach would overlook it, but it's only the bad things that you normally pay attention to. So Ashmore, you're right. I was going to say the tackles I thought did a really good job, but the interior three was giving too much ground. We were giving too much ground at center and we were working on different levels. And so when you work at different levels in the interior, that opens up a world of hurt because guys are going to twist, guys are going to run games, and you can't pass off games when you're on different levels. So if your center is getting knocked back 3 yards and then is getting picked by the freaking shade, or the shade is knocking the center back 3 yards and then picking the guard, I mean, no wonder, like you said, Seals is throwing off his back foot, literally chunking balls up there at the end of the game in the fourth quarter to throw a pick. So got to tighten it up in the interior. Coach Blanc's got a lot on his plate.
Let's talk about Seals, because even with the pressure, you still have to expect a little bit better from him, especially as a second-year starter who had a full year as a starter last year. And he seemed out of sync with his receivers. So maybe we can talk about them in conjunction, because at least in my opinion, I think sort of the universal opinion coming into the season was that the best position group on this team was going to be the receivers. They're deep. They're veteran. Cam Johnson catches everything that comes near him. And Ryan, you were texting me during the game, like they weren't getting any separation. And so I don't now see, and my question then has to become, well, is that a scheme thing? Because talent wise, we know they're better. We know they're better mm-hmm. than whatever ETSU was throwing out there at defensive back. What were you seeing in that sort of facet of the game? Was it just purely they were, you know, was it poor scheme, or was it these guys don't know their roots, so they were playing like a half step slow? You know, what were you seeing in that element of the game?
Again, I think it all kind of generates to maybe Seals, and again, which therefore relies a lot on the offensive line. I think that Seals was taking a lot longer to get the ball out, and so was Wright. I noticed Wright at times looked like, almost like, dude, you got to get rid of the ball. But I think them just kind of in the back, you know, the quarterback position, knowing in the back of their mind that, you know, guys are coming at me. And, you know, again, this being the first game of the year during the whole practice and all of the training camp and things like that, quarterbacks never have to worry about taking a hit. You know, you just sit there, the guys run by you, the patch on the shoulder, and the coach kind of declares that a sack or not. And I think once the bullets started flying, again, this was kind of being the game opener. I think the quarterbacks maybe were just kind of playing like, oh, I'm going to take a hit here, you know? And I think therefore the receiving core, was just not in a position, you know, they were at the spot at the right time, but you know, again, we're talking splits of a second here, to where, hey, I'm open and now I'm not. And now I don't know where else to go. I'm trying to make a play. And I think the receiving core, you know, again, them being their first game, I think they're going to have to do a better job of stepping up when their play isn't there, trying to make a play and just having the confidence to like, okay, I'm covered up here. I need to do something to at least break free to give ourselves a chance here. Speaking on the quarterbacks, knowing in the back of their mind they're going to take a hit, right? After he took that sack, was not the same quarterback.
No, he was absolutely not.
Was not the same at all. There was no chance of him even you could tell on like third and long situations if he had the kind of play action where he had the chance to run or pass. It wasn't even a question he was going to run. He looked so, I don't want to say frightened, but he looked so shook up after that sack that he took. There was no question that he was going to be a runner the rest of the game.
Yeah, that sack in the second quarter that you're talking about, because before that he had actually gotten the offense.
Yeah, I wish I had a better response to your receiving core. Again, the only thing I could think of is, again, you know, the O-line giving up pressure, which therefore puts in the back of my quarterback's mind, hey, I got to keep an alert on the what's in front of me and not, you know, what I should be paying attention to, and that's my receiving core. And, you know, anytime you got to take your attention away from your quarterback, that's not good, because you don't want him thinking, oh my God, I hope I don't get sacked on this freaking play.
Yeah.
You know,
the running backs themselves, I didn't think that Davis was, you know, I didn't think he was terrible. Actually, I thought he held up okay. I mean, if you look at his like yards per attempt, yeah, 3.9 yards per carry. That's not great. But I felt like a lot of that was more due to the offensive line, and I felt like he was able to find a hole if there ever was one. But the other thing about him was that there were a couple, he did have a couple opportunities to break bigger ones, and I felt like he was getting arm tackled. And there were probably two or three spots where he had a hole and a linebacker was a step late and was just getting an arm, you know, onto his legs, and he wasn't running through it. And that, I think that there were a couple opportunities for some big chunk plays that he missed on. And I think that was, yeah, that was a big thing. Now, I subscribe to Pro Football Focus, PFF, you know, they grade out every game. And one thing that they said that I noticed that was actually sort of jived with what I was watching was that Davis did a really good job as a blocker during pass pro. And now part of that was out of necessity, right? Because they couldn't block anyone with just five. So they had to keep someone in. And you look at Bresnahan and Schoenwalder, those guys are both better receivers than they are blockers at the tight end position. So I think that Davis actually did a nice job when he was asked to stay in and pass block. But
yeah, well, not to say just talking about pass protection at running back, I agree. I think Davis did a good job. Freshman, Dylan Betts Pauly. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I say his last name right.
Betts Pauly's right, yep.
He's going to have to learn that he can't size up a D lineman. Like, you're going to have to learn that you just cannot go square up toe to toe with some of these linebackers or DNs. Or D lineman, you're going to have to chop block the guy. You're going to have to go low. If you notice at the end of the game, when Seals had that, you know, whatever you want to call that, where he, you know, fumbled the ball, the backwards pass, he was going to get rocked regardless, because 45 Betts Pauly, absolutely. He tried to go square up on the guy. He tried to just basically block him standing up and got his ass rocked. And luckily Seals got rid of it with that backwards pass, because I don't know if anyone noticed, if he would have held on to that and would have got it out, he would have got smacked by ETSU.
He would have been annihilated. He would have been absolutely
and that is just people overlook the blocking running back. Like, that is such a key concept in the pass game. A lot of times you're going to have, you know, your five linemen who have accounted for the five, and you're always going to have one more. And that running back has to be able to either get low, or if you're going to square a guy up, you got to meet him at the line coming downhill fast as shit and pop the hell out of him. But you can't just jog up there and put your body in the way, because they're going to freaking embarrass you. Yeah. So,
and that's what happened. And that's what happened there. So offense, obviously not great. 3 points, pretty bad.
Yeah. Defense. Well, let's just say the 3 points. So we'll go ahead and cover that real quick.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yes, the field goal kicker Joseph Belovis. Sorry, some hard last names here. Belovis, 53-yard field goal. Dude, that's freaking awesome.
I know.
I mean, that should definitely give us confidence going into the rest of the season. Like, when we get in these situations, you know, when we got the ball on the 40 or something like that, like, he's got the leg, and he put it right down the middle. So yeah, that was very, very, very nice to see that.
Yeah, it was a no-doubter. It was a no-doubter. Mm-hmm. So I was very happy to see that.
Yeah, special teams look good.
Yeah, special teams were bad. There were some good punts, too. You know, a couple landed within the 20, and the coverage was pretty good on punts and stuff like that, and kickoffs, the two kickoffs they had. So I think one was put through the end zone, so... No complaints there on special teams. On defense, there were we'll start with the defensive line. I thought the interior of the defensive line, most notably Davion Davis, was excellent. I thought Davion Davis was the best player on the defense. Mm-hmm. The problem was at the edge, because the thing that I noticed happening again and again and again was that the the ends or outside linebackers or whoever job it was to set an edge just would kept getting blown up, knocked back inside, and they had running lanes going wide all day, going off tackle. Mm-hmm. And that's why you saw Quay Holmes, their tailback, average 6.5 yards per carry, you know, and run for 150 yards because Vanderbilt just simply could not set an edge on defense and force him back inside.
Yeah, you're pretty much spot on there. I mean, Davion Davis was a beast, dude. He was freaking making a field day and embarrassing the shit out of those interior three all night. Anytime the ball, you know, even remotely close came up the middle, he was all over it. I mean, he was either knocking the guy back so that his linebackers could make a fit, or he was, you know, literally shucking guys off and making tackles. So really, really solid effort by Davion on Saturday night. You know, again, to your point, we were texting kind of back and forth. Every time ETSU took the ball remotely outside, either it was, you know, off the edge of the tackle or out into the flanks, we didn't have a freaking chance. And I don't know if that was because our cornerbacks were just playing too far off the ball or not being aggressive enough. But man, all ETSU had to do was just either pitch it, run it outside, or throw a little, you know, hook route. I mean, it was bad. So, I don't know what we got to do. I mean, because I was watching the DNs and they were most of the time doing their job. They were, you know, fitting down on the tackle. If the tackle would go down, they would square up and kind of shuffle down and kind of read the quarterback. But I don't know what it was. You know, a lot of times, gosh, again, I'm trying to think back to the game on Saturday. Like the DNs would shuffle down, but they would go so far down, like they would just kind of forget, like the ball is going to cut back. I don't know. It's like they almost committed and didn't remember, like, oh, the ball actually might come to me. I'm not just a backside player, which is just silly when you kind of put it that way. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the issue was. I don't know why we had so much difficulty on the edges. But again, you and I were just kind of watching the game, and I haven't really had a chance to kind of break down each individual position. But it was evident that every time ETSU took the ball outside, they were going to get 6 yards, five to 6 yards every time. And every time they ran up the middle, they were going to get maybe a yard or two. So I don't know what we got to do. I don't know if that was the linebackers or the corners just playing too far off the ball or what. I got to go back and really take a look at the defense. I got a chance to kind of study the O-line, but not the secondary and DNs as much as I'd like. What did you see? Did you notice anything?
So in the secondary, I noticed Jalen Mahoney, number 23. He had a couple really great plays, but he also had some coverage breakdowns that were really bad. He was targeted 8 times and gave up 7 catches for 109 yards.
Yes.
And including a couple big ones, a big 43-yarder. And I felt like he was trying to do a little bit too much. I felt like every time he was going for an interception instead of just a pass breakup, I felt like every time, and he was letting guys get behind him routinely and without safety help over top. And then he was trying to use, I mean, he's a fast guy. He was trying to use his, you know, makeup speed to get back. But by then, you know, the receiver would already have 2 or 3 yards on him, and it was relatively easy pitch and catch. And that was, you know, I mean, he personally gave up 109 yards on 7 catches in 8 attempts. And that's unacceptable. That's unacceptable, frankly, from your starting corner, who's supposed to be, you know, who's supposed to be probably your number one corner. And I mean, maybe Gabe Judy Lally is the number one. I mean, they're the two starters there, but Judy Lally gave up 0 catches. And so they were clearly picking on him.
Yeah.
They threw at him 8 times in 17. They threw half of the balls in the game at him. And so they clearly saw something on tape, and it worked. So now, I mean, he did a good job of not allowing a ton of yards after the catch, but he let up all the catches. And so that's all that really matters there, right? And so that to me was really indicative of sort of the effort at large, and not giving him and no adjustments to give him safety help over the top once they saw that they were targeting him. He was still going, he was still going press man most of the night. And so I just, it just, something wasn't clicking there. And Clark Lee and the defensive staff did not seem to want to make any in-game adjustments to that, which was the other glaring weakness on the defense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know Coach Lee in the press conference at the end of the game, he kind of stated that this game against ETSU is really going to show us what we need to work on. And because you are what you put on tape, and obviously teams are going to go back and watch this, and it's only going to get worse. They're going to attack our weaknesses. They're going to see that we were weak on the outside. They're going to see that we were weak at that cornerback position. So we got a lot of corrections we're going to have to get taken care of between now and Saturday. I want to talk about real quick the quarterbacks again. What were your thoughts on Seals and Wright? Because early on in the game, you and I were texting. As soon as Wright came in, and it was two plays. I mean, what I saw that first quarter out of Seals, or the first couple drives out of Seals, was okay. You know, again, we saw a couple decent plays to start the first quarter. But then we saw Wright come in, and within two plays, I texted you and was like, I think we found our new quarterback.
Yes.
He looked great.
I felt the same way because he came in and just, he had a different energy, and I felt like the team started playing a little faster. Mm-hmm.
Seeing his speed, watching Seals'
decision making.
Yes, it was a lot quicker. We were texting. We're like, Seals looks off. He looks delayed almost. And then having Wright come in after we just got a little bit of taste of Seals, and then seeing Wright within two plays, I knew. I was like, Wright is the guy. He is a dual threat quarterback, especially in this zone offense where teams are going to have to respect him as a runner. Again, that's what we see out of Russell Wilson in Seattle. Again, you're running that zone scheme offense, but you also have a badass runner that you have to respect, especially in that offense. And then we saw Wright put together a couple passes. He had a couple big ones. And then, you know, obviously after he took that sack, he wasn't the same after that. Obviously, at least in the passing game, you know, he hurt his throwing arm. Again, we saw he was literally waving Seals to come out before the ball was turned over. Otherwise, he was coming out the next play. But I just thought initially before he took that sack, Wright was looking very, very promising. Again, very quick. You had to respect the speed. When he took off and there was nothing there and he rolled out to his left, the whole defense kind of came with him, and then he took it backside and ran that 30-yard pickup. Dude, he's fast as hell. And he's just going to have to learn a little bit again. I think he's young. He's going to have to just kind of, again, not be so quick to make his decision. And I thought, again, at the end of the game, after he took that sack, he had already made up in his mind that he was going to run the ball every time. But I think if he can get a little bit more relaxed, and if he can fake some of these handoffs or be a little bit more patient, as we kind of talked about, these running backs have to have a little time in this offense. The running backs have to be patient so that the holes can open up. Same thing at the quarterback position. You can't be in a hurry to give it. You have to actually make the reads and see, is the end coming down, or is he playing vertical, so I got to give this, or if he's playing down hard, I got to keep this, and not be so quick to, hey, I'm just going to run this, you know. You got to let the plays unfold.
Well, speaking of reads, I felt like in passing situations, Seals was just locking onto his man and not actually going through his progressions very well.
Yeah, I tweeted, he's missing the check down.
Yeah, they were wide open. And they were wide open. They were playing very soft against a lot of those against the receivers because they had to respect the speed, and they were open all day, especially like Bresnahan, tight end. Like he was open underneath a lot, and he wasn't, you know, I mean, that's typically your third read as a quarterback, right? Is going to be that check down. And I felt like he wasn't getting past the second guy ever.
I agree. And I even tweeted that on Saturday after our first half report card. He's missing the checkdowns. He was absolutely like, he was locking in on his guy and he wasn't taking his eyes off. And when you do that, if your guy's not open, that's when it turns into panic mode. That's when it turns into scrambling. That's when it turns into him making bad throws or throwing it up against, you know, double coverage. as a quarterback, you have to be able to go through your checkdowns. You have to know, you're supposed to be the smartest guy on the field, because you got to know where your receivers are at all times, because it should be my first read, not open, second read, not open, boom, check down. It shouldn't even be a thought. It shouldn't be, oh, I'm going to wait. He's not open. Okay. I'm panicking. Like, you know, you just don't have that kind of time. It's either there, second check down, or boom, you're pitching to the running back who's going to block and release, or you're pitching to the tight end who's blocking and releasing. So yeah, we got to see a better job at that QB position of hitting those checkdowns. Again, we keep going back to Wright. He wasn't doing any of that after that sack. I could tell as soon as he caught the snap from the center, what he was going to do. And I think the defense knew that as well. So Seals, depending on who's going to be the starting quarterback again this week, or if we're going to see more shuffling of Wright coming in and those guys sharing reps, both of them, when they're in the passing game situation, to your point, we got to see them do a better job of hitting the check down, checking their guy. If it's open, take it. If not, you know, you just got to work through your progression. So, that's what good quarterbacks can do, you know, and I'm not saying that these guys don't have that ability, because they absolutely do. But from an offense perspective, it all starts with the quarterbacks feeling comfortable in the pocket, you know. And I don't know if after Saturday they felt that. And I have some really bad news for them. It's only going to get worse.
It's going to get tougher. Fortunately, yeah, they've got Colorado State, who we're going to talk about here in a second, on the schedule. And fortunately, they have UConn on the schedule, who might be the worst team in FBS. So
yeah,
we'll talk about that in a minute. But before we do, want to give a shout out to our newest partner here, PlayActionPools.com. They are bringing interactive fun to our favorite sport. You'll be able to get in on the action with PlayActionPools.com Football Pick'em Challenge, which is open to everyone. Here's how it works. Sign up for our contest. Believe Football Pick'em at PlayActionPools.com. Get your picks in every week. We're going to select 10 of the highest profile games between the NFL and college. Whoever gets the most picks correct every week will win a pair of electric sunglasses and a pair of DC shoes. So again, head over to PlayActionPools.com and sign up for the contest. Believe, BLEAV, Football Pick'em. I'm already signed up. I got my picks in this morning. Ryan, I'll have to send them over to you. Make sure you get in on it. And if you're going to host your own football contests, go over to PlayActionPools.com today. They've got Survivor, Pick'em, as well as some sportsbook-style concepts called Build Your Bankroll. PlayActionPools.com, your new home for all your office pools. So this weekend, Colorado State. We are in Fort Collins to play the Rams. And if you weren't, this is going to be an interesting matchup, because both Vanderbilt and Colorado State lost to FCS teams last week. So yeah, we've got that going for us. Colorado State's defense against South Dakota State last week was genuinely atrocious. They gave up nearly 8 yards per play to South Dakota State. South Dakota State was able to run all over them for 7.1 yards per carry, 242 rushing yards on 34 attempts, and they passed the ball efficiently, 18 for 28, 224 yards, and the Colorado State just did not look strong in any facet of the game last week. There's also a lot of turmoil going on inside the program with the head coach, Steve Adazio, and his... maybe a bit antiquated motivational efforts towards the team. So there has definitely been some questioning of what's going on inside the Colorado State program. And so I think that there is actually just a little bit of reason for optimism against Colorado State, just because this team doesn't look that great either. However, the one thing that they were able to do last week, they were able to throw the ball. They had 338 yards passing as a team. So we assume that they're probably going to try to target Mahoney the same way that East Tennessee State did. So
I want to see how Vanderbilt is going to react, because Colorado State, again, losing, which should have been a game that they won last week. This team is going to be pissed off, right? And we're going into their house and their territory. And after them seeing the performance that we had on Saturday, you know, I know that Coach Adazio, obviously, he's made a lot of promises to the university that he has to fulfill as well. And I know him and his coaching staff are going to bring in their, they're going to be bringing their freaking A games. You know, they're going to get that tape corrected. You know, that after looking at Saturday's performance, us against ETSU, this is a big game for Adazio and his staff to come back and get a big win against, you know, an SEC opponent. So you best believe this team is going to show up to play. I want to see how Vanderbilt is going to react. And not to kind of flip-flop topics here, but I want to talk about what I was hearing, and I wasn't there. I want to talk about what I was hearing from the reporting. You know, there was SEC reporters on the sidelines, and I heard multiple times, Vanderbilt is flat. I kept seeing, they kept zooming in on Lee. You probably couldn't see this, but from the TV copy, they kept zooming in on Lee. And time after time, it was the same expression. And I don't know how this, you know, we're all learning as, you know, we're all learning as fans because we're not in the meeting rooms. We're not really sure how his coaching style is. But I saw the same emotion from Coach Lee. And I'm just going off of what I heard. And that was Vanderbilt's sidelines is flat. I heard it from the announcers. I heard it from the people in the press box. Vanderbilt was flat. And I thought I heard maybe you mentioned or maybe I had read somewhere that Vanderbilt doesn't play music at practice.
Bruno told us last week on the podcast.
Yeah, they're responsible for creating their own excitement and they're responsible for creating their own energy. Well, you're going into a different stadium. You're not at home anymore. This is going to be an away game. You know, you're going to have your sideline freaking rocking and rolling because you best believe that, you know, Colorado State is going to be bringing the juice, you know. So, again, I think we're just learning more about Coach Lee and his coaching style. I think I know personally, I have always been a player that reacts to excitement. Like if my coach is excited, I'm going to get excited. If he's pissed off, I'm going to be pissed off. And so, again, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors, but I just, you know, from a fan's perspective watching Saturday, that's what I witnessed. What are your thoughts?
I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to mention that in the first half of the show. I think that one of my bigger issues with what I saw Saturday. I could even see it from my seats in Section H that there was nothing going on the sideline. It just looked dead. Like no one was trying to get anybody else up. No one was trying to, you know, sort of like rally the guys, if you will, you know, and that's kind of cliche, right? But it's also there's something to it there as well. And just watching because I taped the game as well and I went back and watched it and watching the replay, just like every time they cut to Clark Lee's face, it's the exact same expression. And now there's obviously, and that was actually one of my bigger criticisms of Derek Mason as well, right? Was that he had that exact same expression, no matter if they were winning by 50, if they were losing by 50, it was a tight game, like whatever. There was no change in emotion. And I'm not saying you have to be like 2012 Brian Kelly, like all red in the face from yelling at people. But I feel like if you don't exhibit any emotion whatsoever, it gives off the impression that you don't care and that you don't care if the team is succeeding.
That's right.
Or whatever. And, you know, obviously I never played.
Not to say he doesn't.
That's not saying he doesn't care, but right. it's in this case.
Look, it's the appearance of not caring. And that was actually a knock against me as a player. When I was playing, I always was a guy that stood with my hands on my hips. I don't know why. That was just my way of standing there. I used to catch my breath. I used to always put my hands on my hips. And when you sit there and a coach is coaching you and you get your hands on your hips, it comes off disrespectful. It comes off like you don't care. Could not be further from the truth. I definitely gave a shit. I definitely wanted to be coached. But again, appearance. Sometimes looking a certain way can give off, you know, a certain, you know, even though like you're saying, hey, we're not saying you don't care, Coach Lee.
No, we're not saying that at all.
Know, but the appearance of things at times can be, you know,
that can become reality. Like that appearance can become, or that perception becomes reality. That's the
exactly. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, yep. That's what I'm looking for. Perception becomes reality. And I was just like, I was disappointed. Like, I want to see something. Like, I want to see that, like, this is affecting you, right? Because Coach Franklin, he would show it, right?
There is a famous picture of, I saw on Facebook last week. It was a, it was just one of those, like, it wasn't an ad, but it was like one of these posts that someone had shared and had gotten so many views. It came up on my feed and the description said, if your son never is in this situation, it's because your like coach doesn't care about you or something. It had a picture of like Kirby Smart, James Franklin, Nick Saban. It was like four pictures and every one of them, the coach was in the player's face screaming.
You'll see, like, you see Nick Saban, the single most successful college football coach of all time, who's usually a very measured guy, but he will still.
That's a great, that's a great example of someone who's calm and collected off the field, who is completely flat. Even like Bill Belichick and Nick Saban, who literally have the most boring personality when they're talking to media, but come Saturdays, it is a different human being on the sidelines.
Yeah, and it's not the entire time. It's at distinct points, right? It's not they're not a berserker for 60 minutes on the sideline, but when they need to be, when they need to show some emotion, they do. And that was my biggest qualm with the way that Coach Lee presented himself, was that
because
when they needed
because
that
everyone's
energy,
watching.
Yeah.
Everyone, like you said, everyone is watching. And when they would cut to Coach Lee from, you know, from the ESPN tape, because we were watching on ESPN Plus, like when the ESPN reporters would zone in on Lee, not only was I looking at Lee, but I was looking at the OC and the D coordinator and the D line coach and the O line coach. And everybody was doing what? Looking at Lee. And they all had the same face. They all had the same face of concern, flat, not excited, looking at their leader to kind of help point them in the direction of which way are we trying to go here? We all, like, we should have beat the shit out of ETSU. We should have beat the living crap out of these guys.
Yes.
I literally was texting with one of the O-linemen, Julian Hernandez. He was like, we plan on putting our threes in on offensive line on Saturday. We plan on beating these guys so bad. The fact that we lost this game, it is absurd. And I have to say that, like, I think we could have done a much better job if we would have had the enthusiasm, like, give it, not that we didn't give a shit, but if you would have actually shown that you give a shit and have had more excitement, I think we could have changed this game because we got behind early and we never came back from that.
No.
Never, we didn't show any fight.
No, and that's what and every time they trotted out there, they were going through the motions, right?
Yeah.
And
I didn't see a team that was fighting, scratching, crawling to try to win a game.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's what we had to do when, like, we had to change our mindset when Franklin got there. We are going to win at all costs. Mm-hmm. You are going to freaking do whatever it took to try to win the game. And I just didn't see, like you said, I saw guys going through the motions. I mean, what the F? We should have killed these guys.
Yes, we should have. They should have. There is the talent gap alone should have been a 20-point to 25-point victory for Vanderbilt. And the fact that they had no energy and no fight, seemingly, to me, just made it seem like they don't care. Like, they just don't care. And we know that they do care, but it's that perception becoming reality again here.
Yeah.
So if you're on the coaching staff, what is the one thing that you are trying to do this week in order to get them ready and get them up?
Get my guy. I'm going to have my position group during practice. You know, you're going to have a big practice today, Tuesday. You're going to have a big practice tomorrow. You're going to have a somewhat jog through Thursday, walk through Friday, and you're traveling Friday. Today, if I'm Coach Blazek and I'm running the O-line, I'm going to have my guys going freaking nuts on the sidelines, cheering on my guys, having the O-line getting I was going to say this, getting into fights with the D-line because you are that pissed off that you lost to ETSU. If I was Blazek, I would say, if one of y'all doesn't get into a fight today, the whole fucking O-line's running.
Yeah.
You know, after practice.
Absolutely.
That's what it has to be. Football is not a, hey guys, let's take it easy. Like, it is a ruthless game.
It's a contact sport, man.
It is a contact sport, especially a guy, O lineman. You're supposed to be the nastiest freaking guys on the field. I saw Ashmore and Steen showing some signs of that, but our interior three has got to be freaking maulers. And to answer your question, I'm telling my O-line, you better be the most, if you're not going to know what to do, you better be going fast. And I know we talked about a lot of mental errors with guys playing man and not, you know, actually running the zone scheme correctly. If you're not going to do it right, you better do it fast, you know? And so you better be playing as hard as you can and as mean as you can. And I'm having my guys, literally, I'm going to say, coach, turn the freaking music up. Let's go freaking nuts out there. You know, you want to see guys having swag, jumping up and down, pushing each other. You know, I want to see that. If you can't have that at practice, how can you expect to have that in a game? And I'm going to criticize this coaching philosophy a little bit. You know, the more I think about it, the more I'm thinking, hey, if I'm not going to be able to create the type of atmosphere on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays, how could I expect to have the same enthusiasm and type of, crazy mentality on Saturdays? Like, music does, you can say like, oh, it's just music. But I mean, got to remember, these are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids who have a full workload of school, who are freaking exhausted from weight training. Like, music gets these kids going. Like, them just being out there and like, hey guys, we need to get up. Come on, let's make some noise. Like, that's just unrealistic to think about. That's just unrealistic. You need something that's going to get these guys motivated. And music, we all know, is a huge part of a lot of these young men's life. And so I always know when I used to hear my favorite song of practice, it would get me going. Like, whatever the time, you know, back then, I don't know what it was, my favorite song, but if I heard my favorite song, dude, I was like jamming. I was freaking locked in, you know, we are hooping and hollering. So I got to criticize that coaching technique a little bit.
I want to, what I want to see is, I need to see them come out. You sort of mentioned this too. I need to see them come out with an edge. I want to see them playing edge, like on the edge of not necessarily like unnecessary roughness, but I want them trying to bully the opponent, not to play patty cake with them. I want them to actually try to bully the opponent. And I want them to play till the echo, to the end of the echo of the whistle.
Dude, you're supposed to impose your will.
Yes.
On the
and they
guy
did not do
in
that
in front of you.
And the guy, I'm not in a, you know, physical position to call out anyone else as the train goes by my house. I need to see Cole Clemens step up. That's the guy that I need to see step up and be a leader on the offensive line. He's the biggest dude there at guard, listed at like 340 pounds. He's a veteran, he was getting blown back, and he just felt like he like was sluggish and didn't care. And that's what really frustrates me as a fan, is that they didn't seem like they care. I know we keep harping on this again and again and again, but you want to feel
Cole
like
Clemens looked out of shape.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna call it like it is.
Yeah, he did.
Big boy was out of shape. And yeah. I think, again, if you want that aggressive mentality, finishing guys up 30 yards down the field, you better be in damn good shape, because you can't say, well, I'm just going to turn it up on Saturdays. You've always heard that, like, any, like, from every team I've ever played on, coaches will always make a point. You can't just turn it on Saturdays. If you don't do it at practice, you're not going to do it in a game. Mm-hmm. So like, if you're not finishing guys, if you're not 30 yards down the field after your running back takes it up to a big hole and picking them up or chipping guys off a pop, you're not going to do it on Saturdays. And to think that, like, I'm just going to turn it on, or I'm going to have so much energy on Saturday that I'm going to be unstoppable. You're not,
it can't happen.
So,
and I want to contrast that and sort of finish out with a couple of the things that we saw across the SEC East this weekend. You texted me on Saturday saying you had been watching Kentucky. And watching Kentucky's offensive line, and they played the polar opposite of Vanderbilt's offensive line.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up
Kennard.
I'm trying to look up who it was.
Darian
What's
Kennard.
That?
Darian Kennard.
Oh my lord, that dude is so big. I was just watching the highlights.
But here's the
I really
thing.
Was.
He's big and in shape.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
He moves.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what to say. I mean, I mean, our D-line is going to be in a world of hurt if we don't pick it up. I mean, especially on the ends. I think, you know, inside we're not looking too bad. But, you know, looking at Vanderbilt's O-line compared to any other SEC O-line, you know, and that's just – and that's been – I don't know, man. Like, I remember we played with a lot smaller guys. Like, Wesley Johnson was, like, 260. Like, Andrew Bridges was, like, 260. I was even only, like, 300.
How big was Jelks?
Jelks was, like, 285.
Yeah, I was saying, he didn't seem that big either. Like,
No. All, like – we played with smaller guys, but we were all physical as hell.
Yeah.
Like very, very chippy physical. Like Wesley would be 40 yards down the field and freaking cleaning dudes' clocks.
Mm-hmm.
Like would literally be getting into fights during the game. Like we had so many instances.
Who was that redheaded center that you had?
Logan. Yeah. Logan would literally get the guy and Logan would get these D tackles and these nose guards so pissed off that they couldn't focus on their assignments. All they wanted to do was get into fights with Logan. That's what type of offense we were running was like, hey, we're smaller, but we're going to get you so pissed off. And you're going to forget about what you're even doing. Like that's just the type of offense that we ran. And I feel like ever since we graduated, like Mason went into this, like, we got to have big guys. Like we got to have big O-line. Like I tell you, I look at the O-line now, every one of these guys is 6'6", 320, 330.
Except
for the center. But every one of them is a massive dude. Ashmore's big. Steen is huge. 74 is big as shit. Cox is big as shit. Like, it's not always about having the biggest dude. I mean, some of these guys are freaking soft. You know, you can't be big and soft. You got to be big and nasty. Like Georgia's always had some nasty, big O linemen.
Ben, like, Cleveland, the guard who felt like he played there forever. Like he was like 350 and I swear to God, he must've been like the meanest man on earth. Like I would have been terrified of him if I came across him in a dark alley.
That's I don't know what it is. I don't know if we need like more camaraderie. The guy needs, you know, the O-line needs to be spending more time together, but that should be the tightest unit on the field. And if anybody messes with any of the guys, the whole squad, you got to face because they're coming to kick your ass. Like that's the type, that's just how it should be.
You know, one of the things that Bruno mentioned last week was that Kiva Wesley was having a problem snapping the ball at center. Athletically, he's so much just superior to who they've got lining up there right now at center. And I think that, you know, they might have to just suck it up here and deal with maybe a fumble snap or two just to get the physicality of Wesley on the field. Because I don't know how Warden is going to last against these, especially once you get into the SEC schedule against SEC interior defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
Because
there's nothing wrong with being like, you know, there's nothing wrong with being small.
There's nothing wrong with being 6'2", 280.
There's a lot of really good centers that are 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah.
But I mean, like you got to be the meanest, baddest dude on the field.
You have to be a badger. Like you have to be like a little badger. Like you have to, or like a little like Wolverine.
Like you're the shortest guy, but you're the pit bull.
Yes, exactly.
Like you are the meanest dude on the field.
Yeah, you have to be. You have to be and the smartest dude, and you have to be quicker. You got to be quicker. You can't be short and small and slow. Like that's not gonna work.
No.
So, you know, if you and not use leverage well. So we will see going forward.
Well, we're gonna have a long season. I really hope that key points of emphasis this week are the energy, because obviously that was apparent. Like the energy wasn't there. I don't know if they thought that like, hey, it's ETSU. We're just going to walk all over these guys, which obviously, you know, like that can happen. You don't want that mindset, but it can definitely happen. You know, Bruno talked about that. Like, you know, when we face SEC opponents, sometimes we feel like maybe they're not bringing their A game. Maybe that was some of it. We thought we were just going to steamroll these guys. And when we got behind, we got nervous and got flat, you know,
tight.
So
yeah,
got tight, our buttholes got tight. So, like, I think our key points of emphasis this week are we got to bring a lot more energy. We got to be a lot more meaner and tough, especially up front, O-line, D-line. We got to play faster. You know, again, at least I'm kind of referring to the O-line. Hopefully we can get some of these corrections made about guys working up to the secondary level, not sticking on a man, but at least we should be playing faster, right? Yep, we should absolutely not be thinking, playing faster. I hope we can see, you know, guys finishing down the field. You know, we kind of talked about one of the biggest ways that you can, you know, secure your spot on a roster, especially when you get to the next level in the NFL, is showing up on tape. And when the ball is 30, 40 yards down the field from the line of scrimmage and your number comes into the screen because you come flying in and picking a guy off, like, well, I want to see more of that. And, you know, hopefully we can see a better job out of Seals and Wright. You know, I want to see Wright, again, like we talked about, hopefully he can kind of shake that sack off and feel a little bit more comfortable with making these reads and not just being a one trick pony, you know, and being able to actually read. And, you know, we talked about Seals, reading the checkdowns, feeling comfortable, which is just going to come with time. But hopefully we can get some of these things corrected at practice this week. Hey, if I'm the quarterback coach, I'm telling Seals, I'm going to keep a timer today and you got 2 seconds to get rid of the ball. Otherwise it's a sack and everyone's like, you're running. Like if you don't get the ball off in 2 seconds, it's a freaking gasser at the practice.
I love that.
Literally, I'm going to stand in the back of the thing and say 1, 2. And if it's not gone, it's a sack. You know, that's just those are the type of coaching things that you got to carry over with you to get better at stuff like that. Like, you can't just say he's going to do it in the game. You know, no, there is none of that shit. So like, if I'm at practice, Seals has got 2 seconds to get rid of the ball. 1, 2 or sack. And you're running. That's a gasser.
Absolutely.
That's another gasser. That's a, you know, so, damn sure. That's how you know he's going to get rid of it. But, we hope Seals hits the checkdowns. We hope the O-line gets a little nastier. We hope we see a lot more juice on the sidelines. You know, we're not sure how Coach Lee is going to respond.
Yep. Want to see a healthy Mike Wright.
We want to see a healthy Mike Wright.
I want to see the defensive ends actually set an edge like that. That's really what I want to see. So,
yeah, DN, I don't even care if every single play, the DN literally has to pick out. If he's a 5 technique and literally pick out every single play, and your sole responsibility is do not get beat outside. If you get beat outside, it's a gasser. Literally, we should have an entire 2 periods on today's practice where we're running outside zone the whole time. And if I'm the DN and if I give up containment, it's a gasser. You know, little stupid stuff like that. It's like, you're going to get it fixed. I promise you, you're going to get it fixed. Like, if you get beat outside, your ass is running. And you best believe no one wants to do that. So I'm going to not get beat. I'm going to say I'm not going to get beat outside. If coach says every time I get beat outside, it's a gasser, you know, that's going to carry over Saturday. So hopefully we're seeing those coaching points this week.
Yeah, definitely. All right, man. Well, good to catch up with you as always. We'll be back next week. Hopefully with a special return guest to the pod that we've got in the works. So, until then though, have a great weekend and anchor down.
You too, man. Anchor down, buddy.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.